You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Ewan Murray.
The 2020 Race to Dubai is on, and perfect Pablo Larrazabal stages an incredible comeback to win the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa.
I've been through a lot of tough times the last 4 years, struggling with my game. But now, you know, to finally get a win, to win in paradise is very special.
We hear from the beaming Spaniard who very almost threw it all away, and an emotional Will Bessling reacts to just missing out on the top prize. We also reveal how Barry Lane created history in Madagascar. And I've assembled a panel of golfing aficionados to bring you our tips and predictions for this week's event in the sun, the Afrasia Bank Mauritius Open. And a very good day to one and all. I'm Dan Roebuck, and joining me today, I have former European Tour player Ewan Murray. Ewan, how are you?
In blistering form. Great time of the year. New season just beginning. Couldn't be better.
And I'm pleased to say that you've come in your trousers today, because the story over the course of the action at Leopard Creek was the fact that players could wear shorts. Would you have worn shorts if you were playing? Because I know that Pablo Larrazabal did not. He still had the long trousers on.
I would need white paint from ankle to ankle for the out-of-bounds bus. It would be my legs.
Chris Ryan is also with us today, golf YouTuber and coach. Chris, are you a shorts or trousers man?
In the UK, I'm a trousers man. Go abroad and I feel like shorts are more allowed.
When I was watching this on television, I found it hard to get used to watching players in shorts, because it felt like a pro-am. It felt like they were practicing. From a professionalism point of view, would it make any sort of difference to the way that golfers have played, do you think, or not?
No, none at all. And I think the time has come to move into the next decade, and that's the way forward. You have to remember, it was 40 degrees Celsius down there. It's hot, there's hardly any breeze, it's humid. And I think it was a good move. They've made the move for the pro-ams, they've now made the move for the tournaments, and certain weeks I think it will be allowed in the future.
But it's been hot previously, hasn't it? And they haven't allowed this. Is it new for this year? So from this tournament going forward, we could see it on a fairly regular basis in places like Dubai, depending on the time of year?
I think we will see it throughout the course of the next few years, and quite rightly so. We need to move forward. We can't keep looking backwards.
One thing that I did notice when they suggested this, Chris, ahead of this week, was that the European Tour is now allowing this, but also it has to be allowed by the club that they are playing as well. Could that be an issue in certain places in the world, do you think?
It could be, but I think the clubs are just going to feel that they're going to get found out, and they're going to have to move and keep up to date with the trends, because I think we'll look back at this in years' time and it'll just
think,
be normal.
And think, what was the issue?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like Ewan said, you think of the temperature. I mean, you think of it the other way around, and you flip it and you say they're not allowed to wear shorts. It's a crazy decision to say it's 40 degrees and you're not allowed to wear shorts. It's unbelievable.
You see, change. People don't like change. I mean, what about Matt Fitzpatrick standing from 4 feet with a pin in? Yeah. How does that look to you?
Well, I don't mind that so much, but I'll tell you why. You see, as an amateur golfer, you leave the pins in a lot anyway if you're just playing down your local course. So it doesn't seem visually as odd as it does watching professional golfers playing shorts.
Your thoughts on that?
On leaving the pin in?
And how it looks?
I think it does look a bit strange, but again, I think it'll be one of those things where we just have to move and we have to go through that little period of people going a bit strange and having a... But for me, in terms of golf, it creates a talking point on the golf course, and it talks a little bit of a discussion point. And, you know, I go back to, you know, when Tiger started wearing those mock neck turtlenecks, you know, and it was a bit of a what's happening now, and then roll back 2019, there's this iconic shirt that he's bringing back to win again, and it's... I think it's all part and parcel of the history of the game and how it evolves.
Must be wonderful to be that young, because Tony Jacklin, when he won the Open Championship in 1969, had the mock turtle.
Yes, he did. He was ahead of his time.
I don't think he had an Instagram account then.
No, he didn't. Definitely not.
He also nearly had shorts, because the bottom of his trousers were just above the ankle. And you see how things have changed since then.
Do you know, I was amazed how many golfers' legs, and you alluded to the fact that maybe there might be out-of-bounds markers, but a lot of golfers had white legs. They weren't tanned at all. Apart from Charles Schwartzel, who's not played that much, his legs were very much bronze. But the amount of golfers that must have had an awful lot of sun cream over the course of the 4 days, why on earth are they not playing shorts all the time?
Well, I know
when
one
they're practicing.
Thing. Come Monday, they were lateral water hazards.
Yeah, exactly. They were red markers. Don't worry about that. It was strange, and I guess we are going to see it again. And the temperatures were very high. There's no doubt about that. Let's talk about the event itself. Pablo Larrazabal, who's got a love affair with South Africa, hasn't he? There's no doubt about that. And Leopard Creek in particular. I mean, he looks like he's bossing it for much of the first 3 days. He's holding huge putts. There was one on the second day, I think, something like 100 foot, wasn't it? I don't know what the exact footage was, but he was playing brilliantly. And to have that three-shot lead going into the final day and then to come out and play as badly as he did over the front nine, I mean, everything was going left. There was bogey after bogey after bogey. And we've seen players slip down the leaderboard and not come back. I mean, what sort of state of mind is he in after the first six or seven holes on Sunday?
I mean, I think he would have been rattled. And I think it's a combination of things. Because I look at the tee shot he hit off the first was fantastic, ripped it straight to the middle. Then he didn't hit a terrible shot into the green, but he missed the green just on the right. Average shot, then hit an average chip to about 4 feet, missed it. So he started with a bogey. And then if we sort of see how the round's got on, we just talked about the fact that it was kind of 40 degrees. He's in shorts. We found out later that he's got blisters that he's struggling with. And I think in the first couple of holes, he's probably trying to deal with a lot of things going through his head of, I've dropped a couple of shots, my feet are hurting, I'm really hot. And it's just a very uncomfortable situation. And he would have been rattled without a shadow of a doubt.
What did you make of his opening? What was it, 41? Out in 41?
Well, three ahead, four behind at the ninth. And I think this is, without doubt, his best victory. I think to be able to do that, you talked about the emotions over the first few holes. These emotions would have changed every hole. Every hole that he played, because it's all slipping away. Now he's got to move forward. He's got to find birdies, which to his credit he did over the course of the last half dozen holes. Unquestionably his best victory. And you go back to his first one, he had to pre-qualify for the French Open. 36-hole pre-qualifying, and then went ahead and won that. 2008, I think I'm right in saying there. But of all the victories he's had, this one will give him the most pleasure.
Five European Tour victories. Are you surprised he's not won more on tour? He's obviously a very talented player. I mean, five is a decent haul anyway, isn't it?
It is. It's a very good career. No, I'm not. He's not the straightest of drivers. I think he's struggled with one or two things throughout his career. His leg action is too quick for the rest of it. And when that happens, he sees both the right and the left. But on his day, some of the best short game you'll see on the European Tour. And I think we saw that over the course of the last few holes on Sunday. So, I'm not surprised he hasn't won more. And I agree with you, five is a decent hole in your career.
Was he aided and abetted by the fact that obviously it was fairly tough conditions for a whole manner of reasons, as we've mentioned, and no one was really making a massive run at him? Yes, he got two behind, I think, at one stage, but no one was leaping ahead. No one was making birdie after birdie, certainly not the final groups out anyway.
No, and I think the whole weekend was tough scoring. You look at the scores and there was no one who was really kind of making a charge for it. So I think, you know, as you were saying there, talking about the emotions that he was going through, at some point he would have had to have gathered himself and think, I'm still in this. You know, if I can have a strong finish. And I think I would imagine that there's a point where they almost have this kind of word of themselves and say, right, come on, let's reset. Let's see if we can just finish strong. And he knew that no one else was really probably going to get much more than 8-9 under. So if he could have that strong finish, he'd still be in with a chance.
I mean, I'm looking at some of the scores here, and you mentioned no one really was ripping it up on the Sunday. Schoen a 69, Van Tonder coming from off the pace a 68. But those that were in final groups, the likes of Brandon Grace, and you think with his experience, and he started poorly as well, and he didn't start particularly well, I think, on the Saturday either. Only a 73 for Brandon on the last day. The likes of Xander Lombard, who played well in Sun City, and you think he had an awful final day in Sun City. And we've talked on this show an awful lot about how players can learn from being in those positions, and when you're playing in big events, you have to come out of those defeats, so to speak, having learned something. But when I look at Xander Lombard and the fact that he shoots a 74 and he got fairly close to the top of the leaderboard, I mean, that's disappointing for him as well.
If you look at the back nine at Leopard Creek, for those who have played Leopard Creek, there's a lot of talk about the Kruger National Park down there by the 13th and the lovely views. What's not talked about is how difficult the back nine is at Leopard Creek. The changes in elevation at 11 and 12 and 13 down to the edge of the park. Then you've got 14 right to left where the camber's the other way. So that's a difficult hole. You've got water at the par 5, the 15th there. You've got water at 16. 17, you can't see the green from the tee, so you have to position your tee shot. And 18, well, anything can happen. You talked about Xander Lombard. He finished with an 8. Now, Selwyn Nathan, who actually ran the Sunshine Tour down in South Africa, still very much a big name down there. Selwyn has never managed to beat 6 on the 18th, and he's been a member of Leopard Creek ever since it opened. He's a good player. low handicap player. These are very difficult holes. A lot can happen over the course of these holes. When Kyrgios won there, his first victory, he birdied four of the last six, so he deserved to go ahead and win there. So you look at these scores and you take Xander Lombard and give him a four at the last, his final round is 70, which is a big improvement on his final round at Sin City when he took a lead there into the last 18. The whole nation standing on his shoulders hoping he's going to win. I was impressed the way he came back this week and posted a top 10 finish.
And just to bear out what you were saying, Larrathabal birdies three of the last four, and I think the par 3 16th was playing very, very tough, and it was a fantastic putt to birdie that one, and he birdies the last as well. I mean, to birdie those final four holes. I mean, is the pressure off a little bit then, or not because he's coming from behind? I mean, because he's in that situation, you mentioned the emotions were swirling around, but he's finished very well on a tough golf course.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the putt he hit on 16. I mean, that's got to be 30 feet. A little bit right to left, and the emotion that came out of him when he held that putt, it was huge. And I think, you know, he realised that he was giving himself a chance then with the par 5 to finish. Although Ewan says it's a tough hole, he kind of would have thought, I've still got a chance here. And suddenly, you go from that kind of turning in 41 and thinking, throwing this away, to suddenly you get all those exciting emotions again of, I'm a chance to win a tournament. And, you know, at the start of the week, if you just put him on the 17th tee and said you need one birdie to win, he'd have snapped your hand off.
It's been incredible recently, the finishes on the European Tour. Not just this week, but, you know, previous weeks where we had the six-man playoff with the lead changing hands so many times. We had the action with Louis Oosthuizen in Sun City and Tommy Fleetwood coming from off the pace. I mean, it's hard to win European Tour golf events, isn't it?
It is, and you look at the field on Sunday and what a victory would have meant for Will Besseling. You know, 18th in the Challenge Tour, doesn't have the card. A win there and all the doors open once again. And I think that last nine was down to experience. So much can happen at 18, as you say. So much did, because Besseling managed a six there. We've talked about the eight of Xander. And David Drysdale was in reasonable shape and takes eight at 15. Believe me, the back nine there is as tough as you will ever see in the European Tour.
Well, Pablo Larrathabal conquered it in the end, and we can hear from the man himself next.
That feels great. You know, to be the king of the bush for a year, it's very special. You know, I played my first tournament here in my golfing career on tour, 338 tournaments after I got that Leopard. So it's very, very special. I've been through a lot of tough times the last 4 years, struggling with my game. But now, you know, to finally get a win, to win in paradise is very special. This is the most special place I have ever played golf in. To win here it's a dream come true. It's, you know, this day I'm not going to forget this day never in my life.
And what a way to win it. I don't think we'll forget it either. It was ups and downs, the front nine, the back nine. Can you even talk us through the assessment of the round?
You know, I woke up this morning and I couldn't walk. I couldn't go. I couldn't put my golf shoes on and walk to the buggy. And I went to the, you know, I went to the putting green and I couldn't walk from the buggy to the putting green. I really struggled. And I went to the physio, to the physio unit and the Shanshan Tour ladies. They did a great job. And but still, I had a big blister in my right toe that every time I went through it, I couldn't. It was too painful. So you know, I was snap hooking all the shots in the front nine. You know, I should six over or five over or whatever. Then walking to 10th tee, I realized that I should plus six on the front nine. I was only two behind. So you know, I tried to put the ball in play, and the short game will do the work. And that's how I believe in the short game, and the short game, made me take that Leopard home.
It must take a remarkable amount of mental strength to battle through the pain, and you just said the word there, believe. Is that what it took today?
Well, belief and heart. You know, probably if was another tournament, was in another place, in, you know, somewhere we play around the year, I probably give up, because it was so painful. I couldn't go through. This place is very special to me, and to win in South Africa, I have probably as many South African friends than Spanish friends. So you know, this place is like my second home. I feel a little little percentage of me South African. So to win here is it's a dream come true. I now can quit golf. You know, I did it all.
And to win on a day where you said earlier that was the toughest in your golfing career must give you tremendous confidence moving in for the rest of the season.
Well, now I have 6 weeks off, and I have to get home and celebrate with my wife, with my friends, and don't you worry, I'm gonna take care of those celebrations back home. I have 6 weeks. But this is the start of you know, I told my team that I felt good for 2020. 2020 was going to be the year that I was going to break through and to jump some steps in my golfing career, and you know, that's a good start.
There's some nice storylines coming out of that interview. Obviously, the first one we've got to talk about is the blisters, and he suggested that he might not play if it was somewhere else. I can't believe that. I mean, how bad have blisters got to get for you not to play when you're holding a 3-shot lead on the European Tour?
I guess they've got to be pretty bad. But I mean, I was looking at some of the footage and he did look very, very uncomfortable on the course and struggling to walk. And I mean, he must have gone through a few options there in his head, like, can I play without my shoes or can I change my shoes? Or he must have had to go through those options.
Blisters, Ewan. Suffered from them?
Never.
Really? What's the secret?
When I played football, yes, but not golf.
Well, I mean, obviously they were bad, but he's never not going to play, but it's going to affect him a little bit, I guess, over the course of the 18 holes.
I think sometimes they're always talking about injured golfers. Mm.
And they always seem to win.
Phrase I'm not really that keen on, but sometimes if you're not 100%, maybe your expectations aren't as high, but then I wouldn't say that with Laro Tharpel, simply because he was ahead and experienced. Some players like to be the hunted, others like to be the hunter. It looked like three or four yesterday really weren't comfortable once they hit the front.
Oosthuizen, of course, a few weeks ago was suffering from kidney stones. That was well reported. Goes out and shoots a 63, was it? I mean, they say beware the injured golfer because they usually play well. Tiger Woods won on one leg 2008. Any other injured golfers that have won? Or occasionally you see stories where they might shoot one good round but don't actually win the tournament. Is it a massive thing? I mean, if you are genuinely injured, you're not going to play, are you? If you've got a wrist problem or a leg problem, generally you're just not going to play.
Yeah, I agree. I think you've got different kind of injuries. I don't think the injury that Pablo had physically affected his golf swing. There would have been a bit of pain, but it wouldn't have affected his golf swing. Now, something like a broken leg or a broken arm, that's obviously going to affect how you swing. So I think it kind of, as long as it doesn't affect your physical swing, it then just becomes a mental battle and kind of get through the pain for however long time it is, 4 hours, 4.5 hours, and then get some treatment after.
He's endeared himself to the South African fans there. There's one or two cheers when he said, I'm sort of half South African almost. I mean, it's a fantastic looking event. There's never massive crowds, is there? Because I think of where it is, you may shed some light on that. But they enjoyed watching Pablo play, didn't they?
It's not the sort of place you want to amble around because it's really not human territory. There's a lot of strange beasts down there and it's their land and you must respect that. And it's out of the way. You fly into Nelspruit from Johannesburg. It's about 45 minutes then to the Malalane Gate, which is the edge of the Kruger, where Leopard Creek is. I think the changes they made to the golf course, Johann Rupert will be thrilled. He'll be thrilled that tally won through 72
holes. What did they change? Did they change the greens?
They changed a lot of things. Not so much the routing. The routing's exactly the same, but they changed the grass in various places and the greens are always quick, very quick. It's a great place to go, but beware.
Mm, don't stray too far from the fairways. Let's move on to talk about Will Besseling. The Dutchman held at least a share of the lead for most of the final round, but he bogeyed the last after his second shot finished on rocks behind the green and a 74 left him tied for third with home favourites Brannon Grace and Charles Schwartzel. Let's listen in to what a very emotional Besseling had to say after his final round.
I felt so good today and I felt I could win this and that was the greatest feeling I've had in a while. I didn't win, but I mean just going for it and on the last, I mean I won 7-6 to the pin and I was just in the rough, I had a good lie and I mean too bad it flew too far, but I mean just an incredible week, great start to the season and looking forward to the rest of the season.
What a great day to be part of with so much drama. And you said to us yesterday that this is the first time you've been in this position. What can you take away from this experience and what have you learned?
I've learned so much this week. Like I said, mentally, I haven't been in this position ever. mentally been building and building and building. But being in this position on this podium, then you really get tested. And I did really well here, and very proud of myself.
Yeah, and on a positive note, must give you great confidence moving forward for the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was close to winning, and obviously I wanted that win. But I guess if I keep playing like this, keep going like this, that win is going to come.
I always think with players like this who haven't got status, didn't get his card last year, that he will know that he had a chance to win a golf tournament, which opens many more doors than just your more immediate future of making sure you're in the next few events.
For sure, and he's been a professional now for 13 years. You'd say journeyman now, one win on the Challenge Tour a long time ago. That would have changed his golfing career for sure, because then he has the exemption, then he can pick and choose where he wants to play. And that's the pressure he was under. He talked about his shot at the last from 176. That's adrenaline. That's where the extra yardage came from.
Does he get into more events now simply because of the money he's won off the first event, or has he still got to battle hard to make sure that he gets in? He gets into the next week, doesn't he, obviously, for his finish?
No, it's nothing,
not?
Nothing,
no,
nothing,
so nothing
like
really.
The victory.
No,
the victory would have changed the path of his career. He has to put that behind him and give himself another chance as quickly as possible. And the fact he finished tied third with Grayson Schwartzel means that in monetary terms, it's not an awful lot, but it really doesn't make a lot of difference. The difference would have been the victory, and that's why he was so emotional at the end of it.
Charles Schwartzel, you mentioned there. Chris, he hadn't played for 7 months, was off with a wrist injury. This is very much his tournament, his course. He's won multiple times previously. He's second on how many occasions as well. I was still surprised to see him finish third. He had an eagle chance on the last as well to get to second. He was competitive throughout. Obviously, we don't know how long he's been playing for in the run-up to this. But to play so well out the gate first time in 7 months is pretty impressive.
Very impressive. And whilst he was out injured, he would have had this event flagged as, oh, I need to play in that. And I think, you know, he would have been looking at getting himself back fit, ready for this event. And like you say, you know, we don't know how long he's been playing golf or hitting balls. But it's impressive to come back, because you kind of think his golf swing's not going to change when he's not hitting balls. But, you know, it's that competitive edge that you think you're going to lose in the short game touch. So impressive, and it would suggest that he's probably been doing a fair bit of work off course to get himself ready.
What sort of work can you do? Because I would imagine that if you're coming off the back of a tournament, you can analyse what you've just been playing like. But if you haven't been playing, what sort of work do you put in? What sort of analysis do you do?
Yeah, well, I think someone like him, you know, huge experience, obviously major champion, he's going to kind of roughly know his formula for what makes him play well and what kind of drills that he will revert to when he's not playing so good. And so he'll just kind of had this little idea of, okay, when I can hit balls, I roughly know what I need to do to get myself back into that place. And that's where, you know, the experience of a golfer like him comes in. They know what makes them tick, they know what works for them.
What's the biggest problem, Ewan, for golfers coming back from a long injury layoff? You know, it's different for golfers. It must be. It can't be physical, I don't think. They must know that, you know, their body is right. Whatever injury they had is okay to test. Is it that competitive edge that they may well have lost? Is it mental? What's the difference if you haven't played competitively for a long time?
The competitive edge takes time to come back. And I remember Seve when he was out for 5 months, and I went down to Pedrena to interview him on his return. 2 months later, I interviewed him again, and he says, I can't find the pace of tournament play. That's the biggest difficulty he had, being ready at the right time, selecting the club at the right time, taking the same time to do the same things, tee shots, second shots, chipping and putting. He found that more difficult than anything else.
Can you prepare for that? How do you prepare for that if you're not playing competitive golf? If you're talking about, you know, as you say, just the pace of playing those five-hour rounds, I guess you just can't replicate that previous to the golf.
No, and it's the same with the sharpness. You can't just pick that up right away. You need rounds under your belt. So that impressed me so much with Schwartzel, when you think how long he's been off. I know his record at Leopard Creek is sensational, but nevertheless, it still has to be done, and he will have enjoyed the 4 days he had there.
Is there something more to come from Schwartzel? When he won that Masters, I just thought, well, this guy's going to win more majors. You know, he's such a fantastic win, such a great player. Do we think there's still more in the tank? Is it going to be hard for him? Has the game moved on a bit?
It's 8.5 years since he won that Masters.
Wow.
And he won it at a reasonably young age.
Yeah.
I'm never sure if he's totally in love with golf. I think he has fallouts, he has arguments with golf. And when he's happy and everything's going well, he's as good as anyone. But I don't think that happens often enough for a player of his talent.
Good enough to finish in a tie for third. Let's get the complete top 10 from Ewan.
It was dominated by the South Africans, seven South Africans inside the top 10 in a four-way tie in seventh. MJ Viljoen, 73 on Sunday. Johannes Veerman, Xander Lombard, who despite that eight at the last, managed to get round in 74. And they were joined by Justin Harding, who's just outside the top 50 in the world rankings. Good weekend for Daniel van Tonde, 68 on Sunday, pushed him into sole possession of sixth place. The tie for third, as we've said, Besseling, Brendan Grace, who had a disappointing 73 in the final round, and Charles Schwartzel. Joel Schoen sneaked up in the blind side, 68-69. That was best over the weekend. And in the end, it came up one shy of Pablo Larrazábal. 338 European Tour events, and last Sunday enjoyed his fifth victory.
Last week's predictions, we all started again, of course, with the new race to Dubai. The format is the same. The boys last week got two picks. One has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2019 race to Dubai standings. It is 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. And last week's predictions for the Alfred Dunhill Championship read like this. Jamie Spence, who was the co-presenter, went for Francesco Laporta, who missed the cut, and Callum Hill, who was tied 13th. So fair from Jamie, 5 points. Rob Lee, the presenter, Eddie Pepperell, tied 19th. Lee Slattery, tied 64th. So zero for Rob, starts as he means to go on. Dennis Kerwin, meanwhile, manages to get 10 points. Brandon Grace, tied third. Eric Van Rooyen, who did not play. So it means the guests, which Chris is you this week, have galloped into an early lead. But poor from Rob that year. And, you know, I expect Rob to fly out the gates, you know, get some wins on the boards for the presenters. That's a poor start.
It's all about opinion, because I expected Rob to get exactly what he got. Nothing.
Apparently Rob blames me that the presenter didn't win it last year, even though I think I got more winners than him, so I don't know how that stands up. Anyway, that's the latest when it comes to our prediction league over the course of this campaign. Top 10 in the race to Dubai next, slightly different to the top 10 from the Alfred Dunhill Championship, isn't it, at Leopard Creek, Ewan?
Yes, because of the membership. So we'll go straight to a tie for ninth from Scotland, Conor Syme. He's alongside Garrick Porteous. Justin Harding, who's made great strides over the last two or three years, is alongside Xander Lombard and Johannes Veerman of South Africa. Into the top five, Charles Schwartzel, Will Besseling, Brandon Grace, Joel Schoen, who I'm pleased to see is back on the European Tour and back with a bang, by the looks of it. But Larrazábal is the Alfred Dunhill champion. He's also the leader of the race to Dubai.
Other news, Barry Lane became the first winner of the MCB Tour Championship, Madagascar International Golf Club de Rova, and claimed his second Stayshore Tour title of the season. The 1993 Ryder Cup player recorded a final round 69, 2 under par, as he came from 4 shots behind at the start of play to clinch his 8th victory on the over 50s circuit, and his second of the year, as we mentioned, having won the Senior Italian Open back in June. Paul Eales was 15th, friend of the show. Good win for Barry Lane. Still competitive, Ewan?
Yeah, still hits a long way as well, which is a tremendous advantage. And the nerve is obviously good as well. Very good. 8 victories after 50. He's got a long way to go to catch Carl Mason's haul of 25.
That is some record.
It certainly
I
is.
I don't think that's going to be beaten anytime soon.
I can't Never. See anyone surpassing that.
Top 10 in the world next up. There wasn't a PGA Tour event, so I can imagine that there's not that much movement.
Well, Tommy Fleetwood had plenty of movement over the course of the last 2 weeks of the season, having won down at Sun City and also second over in Dubai. He occupies 10th place, just behind Xander Schauffele, who's enjoyed a good year. Justin Rose maintains his top 10 in 8th position. Tiger Woods finishes the season in 7th. Patrick Cantlay, winner of the Memorial, just outside the top five. And into that top five, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, John Rahm with a big jump, having won that race to Dubai and the DP World. He went from 5 to 3, and only 2 players ahead of him. Rory McIlroy, who's enjoyed a superb season, and of course Brooks Koepka has done the same.
couple of questions for you on the world rankings. Give us your predictions here, chaps. If we are speaking in 12 months' time, who do you think will be world number one? And also, who do you think might break into the top 10 in the world that's currently not in the top 10? So when you gaze into your crystal ball and you think about what's going to happen in the world of golf over the next 12 months, who do you think might be world number one? Who wants to have a crack at that first? Chris?
I can't see anything other than Rory McIlroy pushing forward and just getting to that world number one. I think he's had such a good year. I kind of just get the feeling watching him play golf, just get the feeling he's just more comfortable with his game. His putting's much better. I think he's doing a lot of work with some good people. And everything that's just here coming out of the Rory McIlroy camp is good and positive. And I think he's on a path to world number one.
Yeah, I think I'll go with Rory as well. Ewan?
Well, it's always the same. The guests always get the first pick, and I'm left with the rest of them.
Well, you can say Rory as well.
Well, I might have gone with Rory, but I'm going to stick my neck out here and go with John Rahm. John Rahm's statistics and Tiger Woods' statistics in the first 89 events of their professional life are almost identical. I'm going with Rahm. 25 last month, many good years ahead of him. The way he won in Dubai, the way he's played throughout the season, the consistency of it all for me would suggest that he's capable of going number one.
What major might he win in 2020, I beg your pardon? What might be best suited, do you think?
He might win them all.
Well, he'd certainly be world number one if he did that. Is there anyone in particular that we think?
Let me give you these statistics.
You just produced this piece of paper.
Yes, I have.
Was this especially for the show? I'm very impressed.
Well, we're talking about the Race to Dubai winner of 2019, yeah. He deserves a bit of time.
Do you just carry this around just as normal?
First 89 starts, Tiger with 13 wins.
Yeah.
John Rahm, 9 wins.
Okay.
34 top fives for Woods.
Yeah.
33 for Rahm. 45 top tens for Woods, 44 for Rahm. Stroke average, Tiger, very good, 70.3. Rahm, 69.3. So even though I didn't go first, I rest my case.
OK, no, fair enough, yeah. No more questions, Your Honour. Who might jump into the top 10, a surprise, or someone who's coming back into the top 10 maybe that's fallen out of favour? Who do we think might have a good year?
Well, after that last little episode, I'm going to let Ewan go first this time.
Fair enough, yeah,
and then
I'll
have my pick.
And then we'll come out with some numbers.
Just to show you I'm prepared, I am going to go for Hideki Matsuyama.
OK.
I think he'll be back inside the top 10.
OK.
And I would look to two, if I can have two. I'm looking to see what Ricky Fowler does. He's got the game, you know, to get back there. And I'd be interested to see what Molinari does, because he's not had the best year. But both of those have got huge potential to get back into that top 10.
Interesting. Well, I think Matsuyama's a great shout. He's not won now for a couple of years, but he's getting a bit closer, hasn't he? He went fairly close in Japan as well. I mean, had a great... Was it 2 or 3 years ago he won something like 4 in 5? I know a couple might have been Japanese tour events, but even so, he was probably... might have been the best player in the world at that particular juncture.
Yes, over the course of the autumn and the winter and the early part of the next season. And he's won spectacular tournaments. Firestone Country Club, the Bridgestone there, 61 around that course is special. By the way, I did notice Chris had two goals there. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. Well, you can have another one if you like. No, right.
No. But if I was going to pick someone who I think is capable of going into the top 10, and he hasn't won this year, but he's been second on 4 occasions, I would pick young Matt Fitzpatrick. I think he's a beautiful golfer. I said on air a month ago that he needs to learn to pat himself on the back and give him the congratulations that his golf deserves. Sometimes he's a little too serious. And I think once he gets over that hurdle, we'll see him rise up the world rankings. Top, top player.
Next up in the Race to Dubai, it's all about sunsea and golf, obviously. What more could you ask for with the AfroAsia Bank Mauritius Open taking place this week? European Tour winners George Coetzee, Justin Harding and Brandon Stone have joined an international field for this week's events at the Heritage Golf Club. The trio of South Africans will tee it up alongside Scottish major winner Paul Laurie and his fellow Ryder Cup history makers Nicholas Colsarts and Thomas Peters of Belgium, plus Italy's Eduardo Molinari, former Asian Tour Order of Merit winner and two-time European Tour winner Shubhanka Sharma of India, and top amateurs Matthew Schmidt and Pierre Pellegrin. So, a number of names that we've rattled through there. Thoughts on the event, first of all? Looks a great place to go and play golf. I'm surprised you've not try and put your Sky Sports ticket for this one.
Yes, December, Mauritius. Yeah, it doesn't sound bad, does it?
It doesn't. Who's been given the nod this week? I mean, it looks a great place, doesn't it? It looks a great place to go. I know it's not the strongest of events, but I suspect that the golfers enjoy it down there.
Well, Kitayama would probably disagree with you because it was the start of an amazing run for him. So I think this is a great time of year because you look at the graduates from the Challenge Tour, those who came through the qualifying school. These weeks are vital for all of these players. They need to get points on the board because there will be some tournaments they don't get into. So I actually look at these tournaments and quite enjoy it and see who's got the guile to go ahead and continue from the success either at the school or Challenge Tour and make their way onto the European Tour.
Kurt Kitayama, you mentioned, won it last year. Only his third tournament. Certainly 12 months ago, we wouldn't have been talking about Kurt Kitayama. Went close for Rookie of the Year. Chris, I know that you spoke with him over the course of the summer. I mean, when you spoke to him, it's been a fantastic year from didn't get Rookie of the Year, still won twice, and this was the spring ball, wasn't it, 12 months ago?
Absolutely. It was really close, wasn't it, the rookie year? I mean, there was a few people saying if you win twice, that should edge it, but obviously Bob had a fantastic year. I spent some time with him at the Irish Open, and it's interesting, you know, like you were saying, I also find this time of year really interesting because everyone in the field is looking at something different. You've got the people who are new onto tour trying to pit themselves against the established players, and then some of the more established players are kind of thinking, well, the field's not that strong, so, you know, this is a good chance for me to pick up a win. Speaking to Kurt early in the year, he was very much talking about first year on tour. It was all really about trying to figure out his scheduling and getting back to see his coach in Las Vegas and just trying to balance the travel and the events. And you know, it's a very different challenge that they have in their first year versus someone like a more experienced European Tour player. And it's fascinating. I would have thought for a lot of people it's too much, you know, and that's why they don't maybe get their card the first time year round, and then the second time they feel a bit more comfortable. It's tough year.
Did he give any indication that he's going to still live in Las Vegas? I think David Lipsky lives there as well. And I know we talk about golfers travelling throughout Europe. I mean, it's got to be extremely difficult for players like that who are trying to base themselves, well, still live in America, but then not just come to one part of Europe, but are all over the place in the world.
Well, not so, because they're not playing the PGA Tour. I think the ones that play the PGA Tour, you look at Scott Jamieson, when he was up there in the top 100 of the world, he was making the move over to Florida and he was having to come back and play the European Tour. I think for those who just play the European Tour, I don't really think that's a big problem. It becomes a big problem if you want to play 10 or 11 on the European Tour and continue your PGA Tour season.
Does that make John Rahm's season even better then? Because he does play a number of what you would suggest are just, say, rank-and-file European Tour events, non-major, non-WGC European Tour events.
No, but Rolex Series events, which have now become very important. And I'm glad you picked up John Rahm, because I think you're beginning to come round to my way of thinking. I mean, future world number one, remember.
Kurt Kitayama not playing this week, but he won it last year. Big off the tee, I think. Tell me if I'm wrong. What type of player might be successful at Mauritius this week? Is he the identikit? Do we look at someone who plays like Kurt to maybe be successful this week?
Kurt's very, very strong off the tee. That was one of the things he said to me. He's very, very strong off the tee. Knows his tendencies when he misses it off the tee. So he was in a great place to put it in play off the tee. And then if he wasn't maybe hitting it as well as he would like, he knows how to manage his game very well. And so I just think you're looking at someone who, you know, if you can get it in play off the tee, then it just becomes a case of how close can you hit your irons and how many putts can you hole.
It's 6,986 yards, par 71. Doesn't sound the longest, obviously, but I suspect that the winds could be a little bit of an issue given that we're on the island of Mauritius here. We're at the Heritage Golf Club, which hasn't staged every single one of these events. I think it's gone back and forth over the last few years. Other players that we should mention. We mentioned Thomas Peters in the blurb there a few moments ago. I mean, every single time I see Thomas Peters play, he seems to hit to within 8-10 feet and doesn't hole anything. I mean, his tee to green game has been excellent this year.
Well, he's also joined the winner's circle again this year. The Czech Masters was a big victory for him after a spell, I wouldn't say in the doldrums, but a spell that was really far too quiet for a player of his talent. So good to see him back. Good to see him back playing here as well. It strengthens the field.
No doubt about that. Anyone else that we should pick out before we get to our selections? Nicholas Coulthard's poem we mentioned. Shubhankar Sharma had that great start to, was it last year or the year before? Time flies by. Won twice, didn't he? And then again, he looked to... Did he play in some PGA Tour events, Shabanka? So he played in Mexico, didn't he?
Yeah, I made a big mistake focusing on the PGA Tour at such a young age. The events he won down in Johannesburg and Malaysia, I mean, the finish he had in Malaysia was outstanding. And I just think another 2 years at his age, I'm glad to see him back, and we'll see him back winning again. And maybe the PGA Tour's in the future, but right now the European Tour should be his future.
OK, let's get some predictions then. Ewan, you can go first with your
prediction. Oh, you want me to go first? Well, that's all right, because I'm ready. I like the man we were talking about seconds ago there, Shubhanka Sharma. I've got a high regard for his game, his temperament. He's a credit to India. He's a credit to the European Tour. And he should have stayed on the European Tour, as I say, instead of looking further afield. But he's back on it now. And I'm going for Sharma for a victory. And the one outside the rankings of last year, I'm going for the number two in the Challenge Tour rankings from Scotland, Callum Hill.
Callum Hill played in the Mayakoba recently, back on the European Tour, obviously on the European Tour for the first time proper. So Hill and Sharma for you. And Chris, who do you like?
So my first pick would be Thomas Dietrich.
Okay.
Always seems to be there, thereabouts. Just hasn't.
It sounded like you're ordering off a menu there. I thought you were going, for my starter.
Yeah, for a starter. Well.
Sorry, Chris. You.
I see him pushing forward over the years. And he'll be a prolific winner, I think, going forward.
He's not won on the European team. He won the world part of the World Cup team, wasn't he? That won.
He was alongside Thomas Peters.
Yeah. Okay. So Dietrich and
Dietrich had a really strong finish to the season. He was 66th going into
you can't have
Sun
him now.
City.
Chris has
he birdied the last to finish third, which got him into Dubai and a good performance there. Good pick.
Good pick,
But, I thought so.
Yeah, excellent. So Dietrich and?
And I'm actually surprised this person was outside the top 50, but I believe they were. George Coetzee.
Was he really outside of the top 50?
51, I think.
He would have been. He was injured for a while.
51. Yeah. He will be popular over the course of this year. He was 51. Mm. He's shown up on a couple of events recently, and you think, oh, he shot a decent score, then he seems to fall by the wayside.
Good player. I think, you know, I think he's going to have a much better year.
Don't want to rubbish your selection or anything, but, you know. Okay. So, Coetzee, I'm going to go for Roman Langasque.
Ooh.
Ninth in Turkey. Played in all the big events towards the end of the 2019 season. I thought he was unlucky not to go a little bit closer in a couple of them over the year. And third at Heritage, this week's venue back in 2017. And Jaco van Zijl, two top 25s at Heritage, 14th at Leopard Creek this week. And certainly when it comes to his putting stats, I think last week was in the top six. Those are my two. This is what proper research is, Ewan.
You know, Dan, I'd never get through the day without you.
I wish everybody's selections well. That is your lot for this week. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next week, we'll have a full review of the Afrasia Bank Mauritius Open, and we'll be joined on the show by the Challenge Tour Grand Final winner, Francesco Laporta, in the studio, Rhys Davies, former European Tour player, Challenge Tour pro, and we'll have something of a Q School special for you. But for now, it is goodbye from Ewan Murray.
Thank you. Enjoyed it very much, as always.
And from Chris Ryan.
Great to be here again.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We will speak soon.